morning. I'd like to call the council meeting to order. I have really no additions to the agenda except 16.2, which is a retirement. Otherwise, I don't have any changes to the agenda. I have asked, actually, that we get an update on the CRTs, on the internet situation under 8, item 8, economic development. And we've asked Steve, the manager of Queen's Place, to give us an update under 14 on the very successful concert on Friday night. Otherwise, I didn't have any changes to the agenda. Does anyone have a change, an addition, a deletion from that, from the agenda circulated? If not, I'd entertain a motion to approve it as circulated. Councillor Fisk and Councillor Frelick seconding. Thank you. All in favour? It's unanimous. Are there any presentations to council? Table of petitions? If not, we arrive at the public questions. And just before we get into that, because Mr. Dagley asks a question frequently, and rather than have him have to repeat himself, we've talked about digital recordings for council meetings. A digital recording system has been installed, which enables us to record audio of the council meetings and post MP3 files on our website. Our goal is to have recordings posted within 24 hours of council meetings. They will be located on the same pages as our website as the council agendas and minutes and will be labeled audio. To assist in accessibility starting out, we will also create a quick link to the home page of our website. While the system tests that staff did in advance of this meeting went smoothly, we would ask the public to be patient as the technology is new and there will be a transition period. Please remember that these recordings are not the region's official council recordings, but are being provided for greater access to your council and its decision-making process. Having the meetings available for the public to listen to at their convenience is something we have wanted to do for some time, and we are pleased to have this new system in place. Does that help, David?
Thank you, Mayor.
Okay. Does anybody have any matter that they'd like to bring before council? If so, please give your name and civic address.
Yes, Leon Robertson, College Street, Liverpool. Just a couple quick questions to Mayor. South Thomas Corner looks like it's pretty well completed down there, the work and what have you. I just had one question. Needs another look, I guess, thing one, and I was just wondering when that may be happening, because I heard by the grapevine that there's been a few people falling because of tripping and that holds a little lip that's there. I know you have repainted and so on and done all you could, but I'm just wondering when that may happen.
Later this summer.
Yeah. Okay, thank you. And 16.1, I see there you're going to be spending a considerable sum on the HVAC system over at the call center. And my question is, wasn't it just very few years ago that we had to spend a fair amount of money there on that same system?
I think last year we had to spend quite a bit, wasn't it, last year?
And that will be under the discussion section.
It will be discussed in fully when that item comes up.
Right, I just wondered, it looks like you repaired it again. I was wondering if you assumed that repair versus new.
It will be discussed at that time, yes.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Is there anybody else who would like to raise any issues before council?
Bill Cox, 121 Bard Road. Mr. Mayor, on behalf of Prince of Wales Lodge, I would like to thank you and our CIO Kathleen and Mr. McCott, the planner, and PAC and everybody that was involved in expediting our application in regard to the Milton School. Certainly a lot of effort went into that by the council and staff, and it's very much appreciated. we're patiently awaiting the end of the appeal period and hope that we may be able to move forward. That's my first item.
Thank you, Mr. Cox. If I could just comment on that.
Okay.
Just for clarification, because I don't think it's clear to the public in general, the decision to sell the school to the Prince of Wales Lodge for a dollar is a final decision. That is not subject to appeal. The redesignation under the municipal planning strategy, that is what can be appealed. So the actual sale is not appealed, cannot be appealed, and council can reverse that decision, the normal process, so on, but the public may not appeal that decision. And incidentally, we found your presentation and your response to some of the questions that were raised in the gallery very helpful, Mr. Cox, and we talked about it afterwards, and thank you, actually, for being so helpful.
Thank you. And one more item, if I may. I noticed from the TV news and yesterday's Herald that they dumping the responsibility for the various levels of liquor licenses down onto the municipality, and then leave them to do the necessary zoning and so forth in order to prohibit or permit the various liquor licenses, and I'm just wondering if the respective department has put any thought into the position of this council in regard to that endeavor on behalf of the province.
We haven't discussed it yet, Mr. Cox. It's very new news. It was on the news at 6 last night. I personally think it's a very good move. For example, if the port grocer wanted to have a liquor outlet in Port Medway, it would be necessary for them to hold a plebiscite, which will be a cost to this municipality. Just as when Lockport wanted a bar or whatever, they had to go through a plebiscite, which seems an unnecessary imposition. Obviously, we have to come up with some guidelines and regulation, but I think it's a step forward.
Mayor Clark, if I might, that when I heard numbers on the radio, those plebiscites often cost $10,000 or $15,000 to get 3 or 4% voter turnout. So they're really not a democratic exercise. And so I echo what you say.
Yep.
It's probably a progressive step.
Yeah, we can afford to spend some money on a process if we don't have to go through all of that plebiscite business. Yes.
And we've received notification from UNSM that council have up to July 30th in order to get comments back. What they're looking at doing is making us all, the whole province, wet, and then you have to make a defense if you want it dry. So there will be comments coming forth, and to echo what Bruce has just said, or Councillor Inglis, a plebiscite does cost $10,000 to $15,000, and it's very hard to do definitive areas of what the plebiscite actually encompasses. It's a very drawn out process, so I think that it's a step forward in where we should be, to make us all wet and then prove that we should be dry.
I've been in this country for 55 years, and when I came here in 1960, the only bar outside Halifax on the South Shore was the Legion in Chester and the Sword and Anchor in Chester, because the Americans wouldn't stand for this dry desert that we had. Well, gradually, there'll be more and more oases spring up, so it's becoming in line with the rest of the world.
And I just want to qualify, there should be qualifications around
what
is wet, what is dry, how you actually do that, but it's a step forward, because it has been prohibitive to a lot of places to actually opening new restaurants or bars and pubs.
Okay, anything else?
That's all I have.
Thank you, Mr. Cox. Ms. Hopkins, you wanted to address us?
Internet use. have a residential customer and a business customer, because I do this by need to run my business, which is video production. But my clients, I'm dealing with at large. And for 15 gigabytes a month, I think any regular, just residential customer in this day and age will easily use that in, say, half a month. And for me, I can use that in 1 or 2 days. So the suggestion by Eastlink is that once you reach 15 gigabytes, you're then charged $2 per gigabyte. At the moment, they've got a transitional period of November, I think they said, where it will be capped at $20. But basically what that means for everybody is that our bills go up by $20 until November, and then after that I don't know what happened, and that's the part that worries me, because I way exceed even the $20 limit. So for me, if they remove the cap, the financial cap, then it means my internet bill is going to go up to,
So does anybody in council have a question, Ms. Hopkins, on this issue? Because it's, yes.
I don't have a question, but I know, I also know of someone in my area, and they live there and they run their business through internet. And he had expressed concern several years ago that this was going to happen, because there's only so much broadband in the airwaves, and residential and kids and downloading music and downloading videos were chewing it all up. I would hope that businesses are not capped. I mean, I think that's the first step. You have to allow those businesses to survive. But then how do they determine, you know, but then they'll just probably put the fee up for business. But it's a problem that Eastlink has. But it will be very detrimental to people such as Katie and a whole lot of other people that we say come live in rural Nova Scotia, but don't be progressive or don't be doing, so it is a problem, and I think we should look into it if we haven't.
Yeah. We are going to discuss it some more under item 8, but if you've got any questions particularly of Ms. Hopkins, she made the point of coming out, I hope that as we discuss it under item 8, that we may end up by council directing me to write to Eastlink, maybe with a copy to the Premier, to see what we can do. So obviously that's subject to discussion. Yes, Councillor Farrell.
Katie, are there any other options at all? Once you have Eastlink, there's nothing else out there for you.
There are other systems that exist, that is a satellite system, but that's not available in my area. The only other option for me would be dial-up, which it may be more reliable, because that's another point about this system. It is terrific. Days and days sometimes where it's not working at all. The speeds are slower than they are because it's overused.
It's a dial-up. I mean, the word dial-up, I mean, that conjures up a lot of stuff. But would you be able to download the amount of stuff that you could download? It just gives you access.
Yeah.
And then you'd have to go somewhere else to download.
Oh, you can download it. It would take forever.
But it already does take forever, doesn't it?
It takes forever, but at least my speeds are slightly better than dial-up. They're just very, very unreliable. But actually, one time when they came out to fix that, they said that they were going to
It's a better service in Caledonia than in Meleka, for example.
They have a real wire service in Caledonia. They don't have to rely on the airport. And for me as well, it gets worse in the summer because we grew up in cottages at UK. So we're all sharing the same service, so my speed gets slower. But I could work around all these things, it's just that you have to consider when you're delivering a project for someone that it's going to take probably a day or a load. When we'd be uncertainty about what's going to happen, then I don't know. If they impose a real limit, I can't operate.
Councilor Thistle, then Councilor Wolf.
Matter of fact, I sympathize with the lady that in our area, I believe you're in my area, Greenfield area.
Hey, we're going to have a photo of the key.
That's true.
You should both know that.
Anyway, in the Greenfield area, in particular the Greenfield area, there I probably had up to 25 different phone calls on the system, and there's a lot of dead zones, and there's a lot of people that like to do business at home, and they cannot do a thing. So
we'll get into that under item 8.
I just want you to know that I don't
like
the
lady.
Caledonia is kind of unique in a way.
They've been telling me that for years,
but Alliant has a 5 radius of the Caledonia area that it can put. It has fiber optic to Caledonia, but it can put it through the ordinary phone lines in a 5 kilometer radius. And just goes down quick, but it does that umbrella thing. And then there's the same as what you have, but better service if you're quite new. I know a guy down the road and got geared up on a telephone pole.
Yeah, that's
what I Oh, that's what you do. Oh, you guys got a whole radio pitch.
They
have a wire
strung
across
the
That's the
problem. So, Katie, thank you so much for coming. We will debate it. We will do what we can to support you, and because you're not unique. There are other businesses. You are unique. In your business situation, there are others who are suffering the same situation. So we'll do what we can.
But it is a great comfort.
Great, because if some of the not all are as illiterate as me in this field, but it's very comforting to have Richard knowledgeable and in this building to interpret for the likes of me. Yes, Jack.
I think it's the point she makes too, which is really important to us. It isn't affecting just her business, but it's affecting potential business that can't even start up in the first place because it isn't there.
Yes. Okay, thank you very much indeed. Is there anybody else who'd like to speak to council? That's going to be debated under item 13.1 on the agenda, Mr. Wynott. I think we know your situation. You've explained it fully to us. And we've had it discussed in council. As matter stands at the moment, you are in violation of the bylaw. But that's an item for 13.1 that we'll have to sort of deal with when that comes along. Is there anybody else who would like to speak to council on any matter in general?
1411 Eastern Shore Road, Tom Conrad. Who in our district is allowed to keep prime animals? Anybody?
I'd ask Mr. McLeod if he would answer that.
Under the land use bylaw, I guess there's a breakdown of
household livestock and intensive livestock. So it is a household livestock operation. And the size of the lot. So about an acre. It's X number of band units on the property. So depending on size, depending on the type of animal, we're careful how much we keep on the property.
So I am allowed to keep animals?
Yes, I guess depending on the size of your lot. If you've got a minimum of 1 acre of land, the land use bylaw sets it to the types of animals and what constitutes the animal unit. So, for example, 1 animal unit equals 1 cow, 1 animal unit equals 4 sheep, that sort of thing. So it breaks down that way. But if you've got a minimum of 1 acre, then.
So, like I said, my property with animals, a couple. I got 4 or 5 acres.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, are there any other questions from the public under item 5 on the agenda? If not, I thank everybody for their interest and for their questions. And I hope you've had either satisfactory answers or will listen to the debate that as council goes through. I would entertain a motion to approve the minutes from the council meeting of June 23rd. Councilor Inglis, is there a seconder? Councilor Frelick seconding. Discussion. All in favor? It's unanimous and thank you. Now I'd like to call on Special Constable Hurley to come forward and take us through item 7-1. And I think that Councilor Inglis, yours?
Okay. In order to get the debate, I'll make the recommendation. I recommend that the council declare the property located at 1499 Eastern Shore Road, Eaglehead, Queens County, Nova Scotia, as unsightly as defined in the Municipal Government Act of Nova Scotia, and that the council cause an order to be served upon the owner of the property requiring that within 30 days of the date of the service of the order, the following work be carried out. Removal of all derelict vehicles, removal / cleanup of plastics, wood, metals, tires, windows, appliances, and household garbage, exterior painting of dwelling, replacement of civic number, and mow grass. And that if the owner fails to comply with the order, the administrator may cause the requirements of the order to be carried out and all expenses incurred by the region of Queens Municipality become the responsibility of the owner.
Is there a second of that motion, Councilor Fitz?
Good morning. Please note the fact that the property owner, Carmen E. Conrad, is here to represent his property today. 1499 Eastern Shore Road, Eaglehead, Queens County, Nova Scotia. PID number 7009-6821. A formal complaint was received December 6th of 2014 regarding this property. A full exterior site inspection revealed a vacant wooden single-family dwelling. Although the dwelling appeared structurally sound, the exterior paint was faded and peeling, bearing an unsightly premise. Further exterior inspection revealed several derelict vehicles, including some of which were considered to be dangerous. The property bared considerable metals, wood, various car parts, and salvaged items. Several appliances, plastics, tires, C&D materials were strewn throughout the property and the adjacent garage. Several attempts to locate the property owner at that point revealed negative results. On January 16, 2015, I devised a letter requesting the property owner contact our office to discuss future initiatives for the property, which was handed over personally at a later date. On January 22, 2015, the property owner met with me and agreed to comply with my requests for cleanup with a deadline of February 28, 2015. Mr. Conrad also agreed to a deadline of June 30th for a full exterior painting of the dwelling. On February 26th, Mr. Conrad again attended our office requesting a deadline extension for the exterior cleanup due to the substantial accumulation of snowfall this past winter. This deadline was granted by myself without hesitation.
with another deadline of April 13th for property cleanup. The exterior painting remained the same, dated June 30th, 2015. Another extension for property cleanup was granted for June 8th on April 10th. During this time, two further formal complaints were received regarding the property. At 09:35 hours, Tuesday, April 14th, Mr. Conrad visited our office again, advising that the derelict vehicles could not be removed due to the buildup of snow and ice. Conrad was duly advised that he had more than sufficient time to complete my request for cleanup on or before June 8th. Mr. Conrad fully understood my request and was advised that if noncompliance were received, he would be invited to council to report his progress on the property. Several visits to the property revealed negative results at this time. On June 10th, I sent a letter to Mr. Conrad, dated for today, to attend council to have a formal order placed on the property for exterior painting and cleanup. The letter was sent 1 month previous in hopes that the cleanup would be completed before council. On July 9th, I attended the offending property again to find that most derelict vehicles have been removed with the exception of one Jeep and one boat stationed at the front of the property. Mr. Conrad did advise me that the boat did not belong to him. Most, but not all, salvaged items, tires and metals, had been either cleaned up or removed. The grass had not been mowed in some time, and the civic number requires replacement, and the exterior painting had not been completed. It does appear as though Mr. Conrad had recently spray-painted a portion of the front of the dwelling, covering one window. This is the extent of the exterior painting of the dwelling at this point. I was advised this morning that approximately two-thirds of the front of the dwelling have since been painted. I feel that the property owner was granted more than sufficient time to complete the requests. Therefore, I am requesting a formal order with a 30-day completion for cleanup and exterior painting.
Discussion. Mr. Conrad, do you have something you would like to say to
Completely painted. Okay,
completely painted.
Most of the stuff's been moved, but what do you consider a derelict vehicle? What is your bylaw on that?
Well, the derelict vehicle is considered to be an unsightly and or dangerous vehicle. The license plates have expired. Tires are not sufficient. That vehicle has not been removed in some time, am I correct?
Yeah, I had it running.
Well, the keys are in the ignition. So
it started the other couple months ago.
I'm sorry?
It started a couple months ago.
Okay, but it still remains in the same place to the point where it's buried in the lawn.
Well, it won't be all mowed around.
This is the vehicle we're speaking of?
Yes.
It is. Councilors, you have photographs?
Yes.
The validation sticker on the license plate has expired. The safety on the vehicle has since expired. The hood, as you see, is sticking up from the vehicle. The vehicle has not been moved, to my knowledge, in some time, to the point that the tires are buried in the grass. It is unlocked. The keys are in the ignition. March 2009, the validation sticker has expired on the vehicle.
Yes.
So, any discussion by members of council? Councilor Prelick.
Can you refresh me? Is this a complaint from the neighborhood? Is that how this started?
I received a complaint initially from a counselor via three various complaints from neighboring residents. I have since received several complaints thereafter from neighboring residents, other neighboring residents.
Just about an unmowed lawn or?
Unsightly, dangerous unit. The unit's secure, it's structurally sound. There's nothing about the dwelling itself that's considered to be dangerous. Mr. Conrad has maintained the dwelling itself. There's no issues, it's just the unsightly aspect. A majority of the vehicles and salvaged items have been removed and or stored perhaps in the building or to the back of the building, so as to meet with neighborhood standards.
He has made that attempt. The cleanup is not quite complete. We have had several discussions in that regard, thus a request for 30 more days to complete the same.
Councillor McLeod.
If I may ask Mr. Comrade a question regarding the derelict vehicle in the front yard. Mr. Comrade, is it possible that you could just move it around the back of the property rather than, because it's exposed there, it would cause some
My point being, there's a lot of people that have vehicles sitting around for a long time, and they're all intact. There's nothing that's not intact about that vehicle.
Mm-hmm. Is it possible for you to move it to the back?
Yeah, I probably will.
Okay.
But something else, I have some other things about the metals. Well, I have a lot of metal sand back in front of my garage, and I use it for welding. I don't see any problem. I can't see it from the road.
Those metals are fine. It's what was strewn about the property that wasn't fine. More so the front of the dwelling and the front of the property, and I believe Councillor McLeod can confirm the same. I know that, and I've reported that this morning.
And the grass, I mow the grass every day with a saw. I take it down to Trevor's dump. You want me to mow it off with a lawnmower so I can't do that?
Your grass is considered to be unsightly. It has not been mowed in some time. The last time I was there, it was almost up to my knees.
Parts of it is mowed every day, but I take that in Trevor's office. Over the side.
A small portion of it at a time is what you're saying.
Yes. When I was a kid, we used to let it go up and then mow it. You're saying we can't do that anymore? If that's the case, then we'll have to make changes.
Are there any other comments from council? Any other matters by council?
I didn't get an answer.
What was the answer?
Well, when I was a kid, we left a grass road and we mowed it to the side. You weren't allowed to walk through it.
That's right, hayfield towns.
And that's what I use it for now. I mow it every day, some grass, and take it down to Trevor's office. If you want me to cut it off and mow it with a lawnmower, I can possibly do that.
I would like you to cut it off and mow it with a lawnmower. That would be the standard. It does not fit with neighborhood standards. It's considered to be unsightly.
Well, that's pretty subjective, neighborhood standards. My standards and your standards might be two different.
But it's a neighborhood standard as a general, and that comes out of the Municipal Government Act as a definition.
You best start looking around then about other places that aren't.
Councilor McLeod.
We have various on our roster that we're working on.
And the metals, I'm not moving because I use it. I don't know where the thing is moving, that you can see it in the road.
Well, the order, the recommended order, if it passed, well, if you follow that, then there won't be a problem. Yes?
Yeah, and from what I've heard, there's some changes. So when it says removal of the derelict vehicle, moving to the back is not actually removal. So I wonder
right.
if that should be changed to state
relocation.
And like Mr. McLeod and I had this conversation. I said, shall we do removal/relocate? Removal means removal. Does it mean removal from the property? Removal from the front of the property to wherever it is that you choose to move it. So it's considered to be neat and tidy, non-hazardous, and non-unsightly.
Okay, so removal's fine to stay there then.
Absolutely.
The mowing, because it's a fairly large property, could not the mowing simply be the front section? Because I believe Mr. Conrad's question indicates that he's probably going to turn into a little farm pasture land, in which point, and in which point in time you won't be mowing.
Then can I fence it and put something in there?
It would have to be reviewed under a development permit application. But as Mr. McLeod had indicated, if you meet the terms as per the municipal planning strategy and the land use bylaw in regards to the number of animals and the size of your lot, that will be part of the process that would be approved.
Well, that's 5 acres.
But to tell you right today without looking at your lot size and where you are and what the land consists of, we can tell you that you can apply for the process, that you have a piece of land that seems like it would fit what the definitions are. But to tell you this morning that you can definitively do that is not the correct thing to do.
Councillor McLeod, Councillor Fancy.
Can Kellyanne, if I can just refer to number 5, mowing the grass.
Mm-hmm.
Is it possible to indicate that mowing the grass in and around the proximity of the house on the lot?
Well, we can state that.
Because that seems like mowing grass would be the whole area, and I know there's a lot of homes that they keep in the front of their houses nice and clean, and then, of course, the sides are just natural grass growing. Mm-hmm. But is that possible just to include that in this number 5?
Absolutely, let's do it. We can do
that's the proximity.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Are you saying mow grass in front of residents?
Yes.
We have a lot of homes that have the front part of their property is mowed, and they have huge fields behind
sure.
them. It's not what, it's just what you would see in the local proximity of the home.
Because it is the dwelling that seems to be the concern here, and around the dwelling that's really the area that we should be, that would be unsightly referred to as neighborhood standards.
So were you moving an amendment that to item 5, mow grass in front of the residence?
Yeah, in proximity of the residence.
Proximity of the residence. Is there a seconder for the amendment? Fisk. I'm going to take a vote on the amendment, and then I'm going to give you the floor, Councillor Fancy. All in favour of the amendment? Contrary-minded? It is carried by a vote of 7-1. Councillor Fancy.
Yes, as I look at this, I look at the, well, I guess more the bigger picture is that that Kelly has brought us something, and it hasn't, and no disrespect, but it's something that's supposed to be done in a timely manner that wasn't done in a timely manner. And we're saying that and what we're looking at here is, when I'm looking at it, what we're voting on is saying we're giving, going forward, saying that it has to be done in a timely manner going forward, because there was nothing there. And whether it be the grass mowing or moving the cars and things, it has to be done in a timely manner as we go forward. Is that correct? Mm-hmm. But we're
Absolutely. I have been very graceful with Mr. Conrad, trying to work with him to do what needed to be done. Again, we go by formal public complaint only. I've driven by this property on many occasions. I've slowly seen it progress to more vehicles and so on and so forth. And Mr. Conrad, you and I have had several discussions previous to all of this, have we not? And he was also back then very compliant. But again, the complaints are coming in. It needs to be resolved. We need to move on to the other issues. So,
question. Do we have any more discussion on this issue? Are you ready for the question on the
question?
Question. On the amended motion?
Yes.
Question.
All in favor of the amended motion? Contrary-minded? It's passed by a vote of 7-1.
What's left to do? Just mow the grass?
Vehicle.
Would you like me to tell you?
No, I think that this issue is closed. I think that you'll discuss that with Councillor, with Mr. Conrad.
Thank you.
And the item is closed now.
Your Worship?
Oh, no worries.
Yes.
Did we vote on the amended motion?
Yes. But we didn't vote on the finished motion.
Well, I just took that vote. I did the second vote. And it was passed by a vote of 7-1.
Okay. Motion as amended.
As amended.
Item 8 under economic development, and I know Bill Crookshank. Thanks,
you.
Kitty.
Thank you very much.
And I'd ask Richard to come forward. And could you bring us up to date on this whole internet thing, please? And in deference to me, would you use short words?
Thank you. Good morning. We know this rural internet issue is very important to all of us. Over the past week, things have accelerated somewhat. You know that about a year ago, we started working on this, looking at statistics and demographics and topographical maps and potential tower locations, working with property owners. And we found an interested supplier, and we've been working with them ever since. But what seemed to be holding the process up was this decision that actually came out last Tuesday on the Connecting Canadians program, where, as it transpires, you know, that the aim of that program was to improve the internet service in the rural areas and give companies an opportunity to bid for some federal dollars to help with that. And Seaside Communications have got $6 million that they're looking at doing where they had the contract for anyway for the rural internet, which was northern Nova Scotia, Cape Breton. EastLink, it appears, have not got any money under that program. And they don't have a dedicated package for business under the rural internet. So in terms of us being able to attract and retain population, businesses, you know, this is all a very big issue. Now, there's a lot of moving parts, and in fact, things are moving every day. And you know, we don't have a recommendation to bring to you today. We're still working on it, but we felt it was worth letting you know that we are on this file and letting the public know that, that we're very active in it. Now the Premier is now involved in it. He's wanting all of Nova Scotia to have cost-effective and sufficient internet throughout, although we don't know at this stage what the province are actually doing on that. So we're trying to find out. At the same time, the CRTC are accepting comments from all Canadians online. Actually, today is the last day for those comments on the whole internet service across Canada. And this is part of a consultation that's been going on. There will be a second phase to it come out in the fall based on the themes that are emerging in this first section and a public hearing next April. So I would urge anybody who has opinions and input to go online and do that. And certainly I can send around, I will send around to councillors today the link for that, just so that you can go on there if you haven't already. So Richard and I have been focusing on a solution. And the first company we were working with doesn't seem to be coming to fruition, but we're working with a second company now. We're meeting with them tomorrow. They're very keen to meet with us. It's a first sort of meeting. It's a fact-finding discussion. So it's another potential supplier. But even, you know, as late as last night, you know, we've become aware of the satellite company ExploreNet. They were sort of had exceeded their capacity and also had a cap situation, but they're coming back into the game now, and maybe there's a potential that they're going to extend their availability. So it's all very much a moving part. So, you know, we're continuing to monitor the situation and work as aggressively as we can towards a solution.
Richard, do you have anything to add?
No, I don't think so. Not at the moment. Okay. I don't have to answer any questions.
Deputy Mayor Norman.
Those companies always look at their business picture, and they need to have that customer base to make it work. Have you given any thought to us working very closely with Shelburne, the municipalities in Shelburne counties, and Lunenburg rural counties, and perhaps even over to Annapolis? Because they're also all in the same boat.
Mm-hmm.
And if there was a close staff formation, if they had staff that also, so you could go and say, you know, because as a group you have that many more customers. And if, you know, because we're all in the same boat.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
if you know, yeah.
No, a reach out done to UNSM yesterday to see if there was any initiative on their part to get all those counties that are affected, because you're right, there's a whole bunch
yeah.
of us.
But often that the UNSM stuff gets ignored, but sometimes a direct call from
yeah.
our staff to their staff,
yeah.
You know, rather than
through
UNSM, because
yeah.
they deal with so much stuff. But
yeah. Yeah.
Councilor Inglis.
Throughout the last number of years, really, Jill has kept us up to date and has had some successes in the internet battle. So I think that we can rest assured that Richard and Jill will keep us apprised and that they're going to keep working towards solutions. But in to deal with the one order of the day, as a council, we committed to economic development as our key, as our mandate. And to me, Katie Hopkins in Maliga business is just as important as a business on Spring Garden Road in Halifax in terms of the ability to have the capacity to do their work on the internet. So I don't know if and April can steer us, or Kathleen, if we need a motion or just a consensus of council that our mayor have full privilege to write a letter, you know, certainly to East Lincoln and copy to the premier about the absolute importance of the internet to the rural without being imposed these heavy penalties to use it. And I don't know.
I think subject to contradiction by staff, I can take a direction from council without a motion, and that.
They think this is such a simple, you know. I think it got debated enough in the public question. You know, we have an obligation to not only our business people like Katie, but other people who would wish to do business in this community, to stand up and say, look, we're with the rurals, and we need equal access.
And I've been to two or three meetings with Richard and Jill on this issue. Not that I'm any help, I just, because I don't understand what's being.
Well, all these good British voices, I think, really.
All, exactly. Peter was next, I think, and then Susan, and then I think Brown, were you trying to get in here too? And then Brown, okay.
So this is just the wireless internet that's being connected.
East Link, in 2007, when the Broadband for Rural Nova Scotia initiative was created with the province, they implemented a wireless solution. And at the moment, that's really what the limiter is. It was a solution that was chosen at the time. 8 years later, it's inadequate for the purpose.
So they created a monopoly, and then they had it capped at a certain price.
The original contract between Eastlink and the province was not allowed to be touched. There was a piece of the contract which said that they could only charge a certain amount for the service, so that it was compatible with urban areas. That contract has recently expired, which is why they now feel that they have license to charge for extension to the 15 gigabyte limit.
So now they don't have a monopoly on it.
They never really had a particular, an absolute monopoly, because
they had funding from the province.
That's right. There have been alternatives in Queen's County for some people, but not for everybody.
Susan, then Brian, and then
Ray. Joe, you referenced communication with CRTC and going online and trying to find out who you may contact or, you know, you communicate through. I know that there are various commissioners that are designated to specific areas through CRTC, and it might be worth your while to contact the local commissioner that serves the areas. I used to know that person years ago, but I'm not sure whether she's still in that position or not, but that might be a real, because she's more closer to home,
yes,
and or whoever it is now. And also, so that might be something you might want to really target.
Sure.
And I don't know whether, when the REN gets up and running, is this something that you should be putting on their agenda, or has that been?
It will be at least, I would say, a good 10 months before the REN is up and running with policy and staffing and everything else.
But I was thinking about that as, because if we were talking about Shelburne and Lunenburg and Queens, and of course that's the,
too far.
That's not doable.
Just following up before I get back to Brian. In the direction to the mayor to write, it would also be perhaps a direction for us to, for me to file with the CRTC questionnaire.
Yes.
To because the deadline's so close, and if you we'll work together on that one. Sorry, Councillor Frederick.
Two questions. The first one was the East Link battle, and what Katie wasn't able to tell you or forgot to tell you was that she's not able to go in as a business. She's just in a residential. So, you know, if there's a business, if there's a cap for residential and business, that's very iffy as well.
Yeah.
Excludes a lot of people when you're a home-based business. So, just wanted to get that in there. So in Caledonia, at the hub, what are they going to use? Is it not a big issue for?
It's not a massive issue because, as Councillor Waterman said, Caledonia is actually reasonably fortunate in that Bell Alliance supply ADSL, which is a particular form of wired internet, which is transferred over the telephone lines. And what that means is that the Caledonia area, a 5 or 6 roughly kilometer radius out from the exchange, can be serviced down the phone lines. And it gives round about 7 megabits per second, which is reasonable. It's not great. It's certainly nowhere near fiber optic type speeds, but it's enough. So the hub would certainly be able to benefit from that. We could bring 2 lines into the hub and have, you know, them dedicated for particular jobs. And certainly in the short term, that would be fine.
Is that somewhere in between dial-up and Argyro?
Yeah.
What you're talking about?
Yeah. Yeah, so in terms of rough comparison speeds-wise, dial-up might be somewhere around about, up to 0.5 megabit per second. The Eastlink system should be up to about 1.5 megabits per second, but most users, and Katie will certainly qualify that it's often much, much less than that. So that's 1.5. The ADSL that's available in Caledonia and in Liverpool under the ultra high speed from Bell Alliance is roughly 7 megabits per second. And then by comparison, fiber optic can give you anywhere up to 80 to 100 megabits per second.
Wow.
So we're talking chalk and cheese here. And for somebody like Katie, who's having to move large video files, which can be, you know, several, a gigabit maybe in size, that can take several days on her connection, whereas if she had access to fiber optic, it would take seconds.
And there's no interest in Alliant to extend it?
It's a really good point. So one option, there are various options and alternatives, but to date there has been very little, comment about what Alliant is doing in all of this. You know,
should that not be another letter maybe that as our backup plan if Eastlink seems to be in control? So
if my arm is in a sling at next meeting, I'll know why. Signing all these letters.
Oh. Well, it seems
like
the backup plan that if Alliant in Caledonia and working, and you're building a hub around something that's working, and you have people that are down the road, why wouldn't we be pushing Alliant?
Because it's very expensive to run the cabling.
Yeah.
I mean, I know Liverpool primarily has high speed now, but it was a long time before it came. And still into the outer reaches, like in Mill Village, I don't think we can get it yet.
No.
And we're right along the highway.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they could just pop in, and it's very expensive.
Yeah.
But I mean, it's worth a try. It's worth an ask to the premier.
It only goes
solution
to
the problem.
Yes.
Actually, the there are two slightly different things in there with Bell Alliant. I think it'll be a long time until we see them cabling fiber optic throughout the county. However, one thing that they could do, and they would have to do as an interim step to that, would be to upgrade their exchanges to be digital exchanges, which would mean that they could service multiple 5 kilometer radiuses from their exchanges.
Mm-hmm.
So that would give that ADSL, that up to 7 megabit per second speed.
Councilor Pansy.
Of course, Richard, I'm not up on this. It's all just kind of way over my head. But I take it we're with the Eastlink, it's limited by the law of how much usage So what do we need? Is it more lines? Is it towers? What is the holding back factor?
Okay, so with Eastlink particularly, there's several things that are holding the system up. But primarily it was the design of the network, the way that they designed the components to fit together, which is creating bottlenecks. Okay, so for each tower with an access point, it has a cluster of houses that connect to it. Now, if one of those people uses a lot of data, it reduces the amount of data in total which is available to everybody else. And this is the rationale that Eastlink are using for having this data cap. Okay? Now, there are flaws in that. But given that that's the situation, one thing that they could do would be increase the capacity to the tower so that bottleneck is now wider. Yeah, you've still got the existing infrastructure, it's still got issues and problems, but at least the capacity is greater.
So you take the cap off, or more level?
The cap is there really so that instead of them being committed to spending more money and improving the capacity, what they're saying is that they'll leave the infrastructure exactly the way it is, but divvy the data up more fairly amongst the people. So they're using the argument that the system is doing exactly what it was designed to do when they were contracted to provide service. They're fulfilling the terms of that contract. But in order to have it more fairly distributed, they are going to cap heavy users. Now the problem with that, of course, is certainly for small businesses in Queen's County, is that often there's no alternative. And the problem, as Councillor Freilich said, is that there's no differentiation between a residential service and a commercial service. Many businesses would say, okay, we'll pay a little bit extra if it's a robust service that's slightly faster. Yeah? But there is no differentiation at the moment.
Has somebody not spoken, Councillor Waterman? I think most people have spoken.
Yeah.
You go ahead.
So once the infrastructure is there, what is their cost to people like Eastlink to boost it? Is there any, does it cost a lot to pay more power?
The infrastructure would be the major cost in an implementation like that. Adding capacity is a relatively would be a much less, much lower cost. Yeah.
Yes, go ahead, Cassie.
Richard, we were at a Nova Scotia Power presentation where they said that they're going to be putting digital meters because their wired lines have enough bandwidth to be able to shoot that into your home and draw it back out again. Could it not be looked into that Alliant or Bell and Nova Scotia Power partner on the rural areas? If they can bring digital meter reading into our homes, why can't they partner and bring internet into our homes?
Because
I mean, just into the areas that aren't in Halifax, that aren't in, you know, Cape Breton or Toro or Bridgewater.
Yeah. Broadband over power lines is an established technology. It could have been chosen in 2007 when the broadband initiative was being put together. There have been technical issues in terms of, it's quite a noisy, you can imagine the telephone line, every time you switch something on or off it makes a click on the system, so it's noisy. But there are filters and ways to get around that. It can be done for sure.
But would the noise be... Like right now, Katie could be in a detrimental situation that, you know, she's going to end up paying as much for internet as she would be able to charge to do the work.
Yep.
Would the noise be too great for her to be able to handle that?
No, it's just not. It's not a technology which has been adopted. That's the issue. It could be done.
We should ask about that in our letter too.
Yeah.
Yep.
Could we be a pilot area?
Richard's going to work. I think we need to be strategic in how we send our letters and so on.
Yeah.
We have, coming back to what Joe was reporting, we had been working with this other company which was using a different technology totally. And it looked very encouraging now for a while, particularly for Caledonia. And then it was going to step out to Greenfield. And we tend to think of, you know, some of the smaller businesses, but take Freeman's, for example, which I think now is our largest employer in Queens. And most of their troubleshooting, most of their repairs and troubleshooting of equipment is done over the internet. And given the very poor service, it can take them a long time to get through, and they can be connected up, and then they lose the service, and it may take them a day to get reconnected, and that sort of thing. So it's a huge problem, and we have been working on it. It is a priority for economic development. So I don't want to close off the debate. Kitty, is there anything you'd like to add beyond what you've heard, or? Well, thank you for coming, and thank you for participating. We'll take it from here. It will remain a priority. We've got some, and we'll keep reporting back to council periodically as we make progress. But thank you all. I thought it was a discussion worth having, and some action worth taking. Thank you. Corporate services. Do you have anything, Councillor Inglis? Councillor Fisk.
No, Mayor Clark, at the present time, I have nothing except a no.
Councilor Waterman, do you have anything under engineering?
No.
I see some paving going on in the community at the moment, some patch paving and
regular
maintenance. Oh, yes, it's good to see it being done now. So. That brings us to finance. Councillor Inglis, there's a motion.
I have a motion, Mayor Clark, regarding bank signing officers. I so move that the Council of the Region of Queens Municipality approve any of the four signatures of Mayor Christopher Clark, Deputy Mayor Darlene Norman, Richard McClellan, Chief Administrative Officer, for Jennifer Keating Hubley, Director of Finance, to be the first authorized signature as bank signing officers effective July 15, 2015. And that the Chief Administrative Officer or Director of Finance be authorized to countersign, and further that these officers be authorized for signing all Region of Queens bank accounts. And for the Region of Queens pension plan, I so move that the Council of the...
They're separate
motions. Oh, sorry, they are separate motions.
Okay.
My fault.
So do you have a seconder on the first motion? Councilor North, Deputy Mayor?
No, Norman? I shouldn't, because I'm a...
Oh, yes. Councilor Fisk. Seconding...
Question.
Councilor Frelick, question? Are you a second?
No, I thought you were looking for a second.
Okay, sorry. There was is there any discussion on the motion?
Question.
All in favor? It's unanimous. Thank you. And the second motion?
And the second motion regarding the Region of Queens pension plan. I so move that the Council of the Region of Queens Municipality approve any of the four signatures of Mayor Christopher Clark, Deputy Mayor Darlene Norman, Richard McClellan, Chief Administrative Officer, or Jennifer Keating Hubley, Director of Finance, to be the first authorized signature as pension signing officers, effective July 15, 2015, and that the Chief Administrative Officer or Director of Finance be authorized to countersign.
Is there a seconder for that motion? Councilor McLeod, thank you. Discussion? If not, I'm taking the question. All in favor? It's unanimous. Thank you. Anything under recreation, Councilor Fancy? Sorry.
I even pointed that way.
I'm two items down in the agenda of my thinking. Sorry. Councilor Frelick, anything under recreation?
I just wanted to say that we have ended our first 21 days with great success. Record crowds everywhere, straight through from the opening, straight through to the rodeo. I don't want to steal any thunder from Steve, but... we certainly made an impact and a statement with our 21 days, and looking forward to the next 21. So well done, everyone.
It was stunning, actually, right from the 21st of June right through until the 10th of July. And I heard you as chair of Privateer Days saying your crowds on Saturday were the biggest you'd ever seen, and the fact that despite the dreadful weather on Sunday, you had a full...
Still had a full...
I hate to call it a beer tent, but entertainment tent. This is great. Now, I think everybody deserves an enormous pat on the back, and it impresses me, too, how many volunteers there are through all of that.
Yes. The key to all of it is momentum, and continuing on and be always looking for the next 21 days, because we certainly had so many people in town, and I have to say, you know, there's been a lot of talk about the dogwoods.
Oh, yeah.
Those dogwoods have been stopped by so many people.
Yeah.
And as part of this 21 days, just everyone commenting and taking pictures and having their pictures taken. So it seems like there's an event waiting to happen right there. That
John Leaf must have brought those in, did he?
No.
Yeah, good man. He had the brown end in the air.
But it's certainly, you know, we have Hank Snow coming up, and we have lots of events over the summer, paranormal, but momentum is the key, and man, everybody worked hard to get this 21 days off the ground, and so.
Well, you fellows that pulled the 21 days together, which was you and Heather and Kathleen and Norm
Donahue,
did a great job. I mean, it's a great concept. We spent some money doing it on advertising and so on, but it shows that it pays off. It's great. Yeah.
And because it was so great and it's good to build on it, not saying, you know, not do a different one another time of year.
Yeah.
But it just makes so much sense to do that, run it through that time period again.
Yeah.
And I echo Councillor Frolic's comments about the dogwoods. Yeah, people that I've met at White Point and around are like, what's with all those beautiful pink trees? You know, and even people from Halifax are saying, they're everywhere.
Yeah.
And you know what, they're just going to be so spectacular when they get that 30 feet, you know, that we really need to
come up with something.
Because they stay so long, you know,
they
flower for, and it was your great idea. I know we jest about that, but I think this community, it was a great idea and thought that you had, and it was great of the region at that point in time to offset the cost, which made them so
somebody asked me the other day, will we do it again? And in fairness, we got $40,000 from the federal government for the Millennium Project. And we spend it on all of the community signs. There was a committee that Marilyn and I chaired, and all of the community signs came out of that. And each community came up with its own slogan. And each council went around to every community, and there are 50, despite what you might read on a blog or two, that every council went around and worked with the community to get the slogan. And the rest of the money was used to subsidize the cost of the dogwoods, and we sold them for $20 for small ones and $60 for the larger ones. I can remember going with David Clattenburg and buying three in Halifax. We were up in Halifax for some reason at $90 a piece, and then coming down and selling them for $60. So there was that subsidy from the government. Yes, Brett.
And there is a huge program being rolled out for next year for the 150th. Which is, and I've got many, many emails looking for projects, and this would be an ideal one where we come up, we take that concept and maybe build on it. But if nobody steps forward and does that, that money just goes to other communities. So, and that's all in the pre-planning stages. It has to be happened now. I mean, it's important.
Yes, and I think, I'm not sure we can talk later about where it fits. Does it fit either economic development or recreation, or even a special committee of council?
Absolutely.
That we might emulate what we did for the Millennium and bring in a broad-based committee of citizens to help, because it will also straddle an election period.
And there are, I know a few people that are banding together to do some projects, particularly on the waterfront, that are going in for that that funding. So it would be great to have them all together in one.
Put it on the agenda for a meeting or two. We'll have a new CAO, so I don't think we want to bog him down in that quite. Yeah, but I was thinking, I was actually traveling with Councillor McLeod yesterday, and it probably wouldn't be a bad idea for us to have a strategy session sometime in September to see where we want to go as we move into the next budget year and so on. Okay, anything else, Councillor Frelick, on recreation?
No, that's it. Thank you.
I think it's a great report. Thank you. That brings us to item 13.1. Councillor McLeod and we've got Councillor McLeod and Mr. McLeod and
Okay, in order to get the discussion going, I would make the recommendation first and then we can debate. Number 13.1, I recommend that the Council of the Region of Queens Municipality request that Mr. Edward Wynot make formal application to amend the region's municipal planning strategy and land use bylaw to create a new zone to allow for chickens in urban residential areas, and that the proposed amendments include a requirement to hold a public information session prior to scheduling a public hearing to deal with such rezoning requests.
Is there a second of that motion? Councillor Waterman. Councillor McLeod. Mr. McLeod.
Okay.
I'm not sure are they promoted him or demoted him, one of the two.
Yes, I guess subsequent to the June 9th meeting of council, in which it was the direction of council to refer this item back to the Planning Advisory Committee to investigate a process essentially for a greater consultation into allowing chickens in urban residential areas. We had our Planning Advisory Committee meeting in July, at which time there was considerable debate as to how to address this topic. And at that time, it was felt that the most appropriate avenue would be to have amendments made to the Municipal Planning Strategy and Land Use Bylaw that would permit this use, and essentially that those amendments would see the creation of a new zone, which would essentially allow for, I guess, the regular list of permitted uses in an urban residential zone, but also allowing for the keeping of a small number of chickens and some other regulations around that. So, and as part of that recommendation, that also the policy, our potential policy, would also include the requirement that an additional public information session be held to acquire any or additional discussion and comments and questions from the public prior to going to a formal public hearing stage, which is required under the Municipal Government Act. So essentially, this would be a two-step process, which would include, I guess, amending, number one is amending the Municipal Planning Strategy and Land Use Bylaw to include enabling policy and regulations to allow for this sort of use. And then upon completion of that, there would be another amendment process to actually rezone specific properties to this new zone that was created under the new policy. So that's essentially the recommendation that's come back from Planning Advisory Committee too.
Councillor McLeod.
If I may expand on Mike's comments there, as we all know, we've been dealing with this issue for this request for a long time, and the initial request actually was just brought before council through Mike's department and not a formal application, which is a normal procedure for a general resident that wants to make either wants to apply for a development agreement or a zoning change or whatever, and that goes through a formal application with a fee attached and so on, and PAC felt that this should be done in the same manner. I mean, it was an individual situation or request, and it wasn't really something that there were a number of residents that really wanted the same change, so we felt it was only fair to go through that process. As in, you'll see we had something else on the agenda that someone wants to add a specific use to a specific zone, and that goes through the development process, which we have to have an application and money up front for advertising and then the public hearings. We wanted to do that in the same way as a fair treatment to everybody. And also, the public hearing, the public information session, we felt was a way to get the public involved. And it's not unusual to have one in areas such as, I know I was talking to April and our clerk, and she indicated that it's quite usual in a planning process to have a public information session prior to actually having a public hearing if it goes to council to request that. So that was the reason for having an information session. We do have public meetings or public or open to our PAC meetings, however that isn't often attended, so we felt that an information session that was advertised with requesting this change in the bylaw, planning bylaw, land use, that's the way we wanted to have it done. From also looking at other options, we did discover that there was something that is not requiring a public hearing, and it's something called a site plan, and Mike might be able to explain a little bit more about that, or maybe April can help. But that's another option that we might be able to consider if we don't want to go through the whole planning change and the bylaw changes, because that's something that is quite common in some other areas as well. And it would be specific to a specific location, not the whole zone change, and it might be just pertaining to a specific request. Is that right, Mike?
Yeah, I guess certainly our planning documents at the present time do not incorporate that provision, but that is another tool, and I think certainly when we do a formal review of the planning strategy and land use bylaw, that would be certainly a tool that we certainly look at, if there's any ways that we can streamline the process. Certainly that's certainly...
We don't have that now in our
documents. We don't have that capacity within the documents, no.
So it's not a tool that is available right to the council as we make this decision.
That's correct.
But it's something that we can, from this process, then it's something that we would consider when we do the amendments to the documents.
Would anybody else like to speak on this motion? Councilor Norman.
I just some questions for Mike. Mike, how long does it take? What's the process to change those documents so that we can do site spot planning?
I think there's a lot of things you have to determine. What's the Municipal Government Act sets out specific things that you can consider through the site plan process. So it's not something that we're going to do in several months. I think it's going to require
a
fair amount of consultation. So that's
okay. And I just have two other quick questions. So this motion is about giving the PAC and along with you the ability to create a new zone in the urban area, which would allow for the keeping of chickens.
That's correct.
Okay, and I understand why the PAC said, well, you know, Mr. Weinert's the one that's initiated, because so Mr. Weinert has to pay that standard $700 development fee. So once the new zone is created, then I'm assuming that Mr. Weinert's home is going to fit within the whatever criteria you develop for the new zone. But then if other people wanted to have chickens, do they have to then every time apply for $700 to change where they are to now the new zone?
This would be specifically creating a new zone, so we're not going out, because obviously we don't know who else may be interested
in
that.
So the answer is yes.
Every time
anyone after Mr. Weinert wishes to also have chickens, then they'll have to go through the $700 and the whole thing.
And that triggers and
the
public consultation.
And then my third question, because we said, you know, we wanted to keep it in fairness with the, you know, everyone else in the past has had to pay the money, but other people in the past, did they also have to pay to have the public hearing prior to the public information session, because we've never had them before. So is Mr. Weinert, his $700 also going to have to pay for the advertising of that public information session, or will that be council's, or will we pay that one?
That would be part of the application fee. And essentially, it's not an application fee; it's to pay for the advertising that goes along with
it. And I guess my point was,
it doesn't result in an itemized bill. It is a standard fee for amending, isn't it? Or
no.
Do you give him...
No, whatever's remaining of that balance goes back to the applicant.
Okay.
So I guess so my question is, because we've never ever had public information sessions prior to the public hearings that, say, people have had to pay for.
Right.
They've only ever had to pay for the advertising for the public hearing.
Okay.
But now we've added another thing, and it clearly states here that if the deposit is insufficient to cover the cost of the advertising, the applicant shall be responsible for the difference. And generally, there's not much money left off that $700. So in fact, this could end up costing Mr. Weinert more than $700. That's my point.
Okay. Councilor McLeod.
May I ask April a question regarding that? April, you said you had knowledge before in your other positions that there had been public information sessions. Do you know if that came out of the applicant's fee, or was that just part of the PAC's type of information?
It would come out of the application fee.
Okay.
What typically would happen is that council would set the date for your public information session and your public hearing.
It's all done at the same time.
In the same ad.
So the same ad, so there's no extra cost.
So there's potentially no extra advertisement.
Yeah.
You
okay.
would do it in the same advertisement.
Okay. Thank you, April.
Who else would like to speak? Councilor Inglis?
As it stands, I'm not in support of this motion. Mr. Wynot came to us several months ago and identified, specific to himself, the wish to have a handful of chickens in his yard. And I really believe that over the course of the ensuing months, we were given lots of feedback or saw lots of feedback that it's a much broader issue. You know, the issues of food security, knowing where your food comes from, et cetera, are a rising theme in our society. And, you know, we've done the research and found out that a lot of other communities have dealt with it. And I think that for us to have Mr. Wynot essentially become the appellant in a case to have chickens just on his yard doesn't serve the public for what's been identified as a need. I'm not saying Mr. Wynot should have chickens. Maybe he shouldn't. But maybe nobody should have them, or maybe we should all have them. But I think that we need to deal with this issue, and to push it back to that level isn't going to have a proper ending to this issue, and we're just going to continue with it. So the concept, and I do understand with many things, you know, the next item is going to be somebody looking for a commercial dog use down here in an industrial area. That's a very specific issue. We haven't heard broadly from the public that lots of people are looking to put new dog items. So for a business use, absolutely, I think she should pay the $700 to do that. But we've had this identified to us as an issue. It's a broad issue. And, you know, with all due respect, I won't support this motion.
And does anybody else would like to speak on Councilor Fisk?
I'm going to echo, along with Councilor Ingalls, that I will not be supporting the motion.
I must say I find it an incredibly distasteful position to be in. We cannot condone the violation of municipal bylaws ad infinitum. I think we've been very tolerant as a council. Because this thing has been progressing through, we've cut Mr. Wynot a lot of slack in the fact that he is in violation of the bylaw. And I think it's somehow we've got to bring it to a head. I voted against the motion last time it came up, and I really haven't made up my mind, because I find the consequence of voting for the motion so distasteful. But I know we can't let this drift continue. Councillor Frillick.
While you might find it distasteful, it also, and you know, if we came down to the fact that Mr. Wynot had chickens, I don't think there's anyone in this room that would agree that he is not the perfect guy to have them. However, the next guy coming along, and the next person, we can't be sure of that. So what this does, it kind of sends out a message that if you are serious about chickens, and you want to raise chickens, then you come and you get this change, and at least in the end, it may seem like an amount of money up front, but your bylaw enforcement is going to benefit from it, because you're not going to have random people just getting chickens for the sake of having chickens. They're going to be sincere. So that's the way that I look at it. And as you said, very hard position to be in for everybody.
The reason I said it was distasteful at the last time we discussed this issue, Councillor, you said that we individually all sort of support the fact that an individual can have chickens. I find it very distasteful to take that right away from someone, and, you know, but I realize
what's
the position we have bylaws we must enforce, Deputy Mayor Norman.
What is, and I'll use your word distasteful, is that, as Councillor Inglis said, it's a broader issue. I've had emails from all kinds of people, one way and the other, over this thing. And the public want to comment. It could very well involve many people in the urban area. The fact that there's $700 for Mr. Wynot just to do this, but then when our planning officer said, and every other person who wants to keep chickens will also pay the $700, that is what is wrong. That's what's wrong with this thing. And maybe council should waive the development fee for this first step, and then I would find it very very fair to everyone where it doesn't, and in the future, but how long can we continue waiving? You know, if we waive it now, then the next time we're going to waive another 700, and you know, but that's a lot of, you get 10 people in a year that want to have chickens, then that's $7,000 that we're then waiving off our financials, but we still have to pay for the advertising. And see, there's that whole crux. It's such a costly to the person who just wants to keep chickens, or poultry, as I'd say. So I guess, but that's the process. We can't afford to have to follow what the province says. The province says you have to advertise in your local paper, blah, 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 and the ads have to be so big. Well, we know it costs around $700 in past experience.
I find it, because it's a broad issue, and I think others, if Mr. Wynot goes through this process and is allowed to have chickens, others are going to be interested in doing it. And I find it really unsettling to think that this is the court of jurisdiction to decide who's a fit chicken owner.
$700 every time.
Councilor McLeod.
PAC was given the task to come up with some type of recommendation, a solution to this very ongoing and request. We made a recommendation a few weeks ago that we wanted to just leave the status quo and then do a review when we do our planning strategy documents. That would have dealt with this situation. However, that was voted down. We went back and discussed and understand that Mr. Wynot has a sincere request, and we did discuss the fact that he would certainly abide by all the requirements if he was permitted legally to have chickens. There's no question about that. We discussed the fact that if the zone had been changed for restricted residential, that would mean that anyone in that density populated area could then have chickens. So we felt that was unfair to people in close proximity to one another, in, living close together. Anybody could follow those rules or could create a little chicken coop, whatever. Anyway, so getting all that out, I'm between a rock and a hard place. I mean, we're trying to get this dealt with. The reason we decided to go through this specific recommendation was to make it fair. Everyone else in our municipality that want to have a development agreement or a change goes through the process that is set out by our requirements, and that is paying the money up front. If they're sincere, they will do that. If they're not, then they won't bother to go that route. And I really feel that that's the only way to do this. It's not cheap to operate a chicken coop or to look after chickens. I mean, there's certain requirements for that as well. And once this zone is set, then there will be requirements as to the size and how you, and the numbers and all that has to be incorporated in the land use bylaw and the planning strategy. So I was hoping that this would help resolve this issue and then take it to the next step fairly for everybody.
Thank you. Mr. McLeod, maybe I missed it, maybe you've already told us, and if so, I apologize. If this motion is passed, will Mr. Wynot have a time limit by which he must make application?
Yeah, I guess the process that would, if council so chooses to pass this motion, is that notification would be sent to Mr. Wynot outlining that the violation that currently exists with the chickens on his property, and essentially outlining a couple of options, one being to come into compliance with the land use bylaw and remove the remove the chickens from the property, or to go through an amendment process to have the policy and regulations changed to enable chickens to be kept on the property. And that's, as we discussed before, the process that would be entailed in that regard. And also, as the mayor had indicated, that time frame, I think, also is necessary, in which Mr. Wynot would have to apply for those amendments, because obviously we can't allow this to go on forever and a day. So a specific time frame would be included in which to give him time to apply. And then,
and what do you think, Neil, as a specific time frame?
I think 2 weeks would be appropriate.
Okay. So at the end of 2 weeks, assuming this motion is passed, and assuming that Mr. Wynot does not, or decides not to put the $700 on the table, then the options to us are to remove the chickens, and I don't think we want to be in the chicken business. So then we either have to rehome the chickens or destroy them, is that right?
Certainly our option, preferable option, would be to rehouse the chickens to another suitable location.
Or destroy them. Is there any further discussion? Yes, Councillor Fitz.
I just want to repeat, pet care services versus chickens for pets or for the use of eggs, not for sale. There's a big, wide difference there. I think we should take consideration of that. I think it's two different situations.
Councillor Waterman.
I haven't said a lot on the issue. It's not really my area, but I look at the density of the houses, and it is a farm animal. It doesn't matter what you say, it is a farm animal. And to me, it shouldn't really be there.
Have you ever looked at that little video on YouTube of the small child who's about, I would think, 3 or 4 years old, and this hen that comes over and puts its head on his shoulder to be petted?
Hens carry all kinds of diseases. Didn't hear on the radio there's 480 people killed in the States last year from salmonella poisoning from kissing chickens or petting chickens. That's bad.
Councillor Frelick.
Throughout this whole thing, it really shows the need. We've tried to amend or tried to talk about changing our municipal planning strategies, and it's been pushed back and back, and it really shows the need that we need to start looking at it, because if we had, this issue would be looked at. 13.2, we're looking at that. Dog grooming. That is the one that really upsets me, because we are taking, we're at $700 from this person and putting it, and she's trying to go to an industrial site to wash dogs, and where we wash cars, we wash clothes, but we can't wash dogs. So it's all messed up, and we need to start realizing that this is, when the planning committee asks for the advice to go forward or wants to go forward with this. There are reasons why we want to go forward with this. We need to start addressing all these situations, and we wouldn't be sitting here talking about this issue for so long.
That's fine. That is not part of the decision that you're going to be called to make in a very few minutes. I understand the argument. Councillor English, you wanted to get in?
Hold my remarks.
Councillor Fancy? Were you looking?
Yes. Again, it's a hard decision. That's why we're here. Again, we come to a spot. I think our PAC have tried twice to try to make something that can stomach whereas we go forward. And I think they give us at least an option. There's no perfect answer to this, and I will support it.
Councillor McLeod, do you have anything new to add?
Am I able to just comment on Councillor Fisk's comment about chickens versus dog grooming and that chickens are different? This isn't about the actual use. It's about creating a fair method of getting a result. It's not about the chickens versus dog grooming. It's about anyone that makes an application has a specific process to go through and a fair process. So if we allow Mr. Wynot not to make formal application and pay whatever, then we're setting a precedent because others are going to want the same thing. And once we get this going, then we can get the public comments. Then we can get all the information that we need to go forward with an actual approval of what Mr. Wana is applying for. Thanks.
What is the question? Any comment?
I'm taking two more, and that's it.
The only difference is there's a big difference here. One is it going as a business. The chickens are not a business.
Chickens are not a business.
Well, it's not a business operation.
But better not tell Andrew Bessie.
Yes, I just pointed out one of my favorite businesses. I'll just put my toe in for that. When you're talking about chicken lunches in there, I think I've lost my train of thought. What I really want to point out is that us making this motion doesn't get anything rolling. You know, us saying, Edward Wynot, suggesting Mr. Wynot or any citizen can file for a development agreement at any time. In a way, making a motion suggesting someone do something is kind of a china egg.
Okay, are you ready for the question? And I'm going to ask people to hold their hands up. I'm going to ask the clerk to make sure they record the vote. All in favor of the motion, please raise your hand. Contrary minded. The motion is carried by a vote of 5-3. Thank you. That brings us to item 13.2, Councillor McLeod.
Okay, 13.2. I recommend that the Council of the Region of Queens Municipality give notice of its intention to amend the land use bylaw to insert a definition for pet care services and to include pet care services in the list of permitted uses in the light industrial M1 zone, and that Council be cognizant of the need to undertake a review of the permitted uses in the light industrial M1 zone as part of a comprehensive review of the municipal planning strategy and land use bylaw, and that a public hearing be held on August 11, 2015 in the Council Chambers of the Municipal Building, 249 White Point Road in Liverpool, Nova Scotia, at 8:55 a.m.
Is there a seconder for that motion? Councillor Frelick. Is there a discussion on the motion, or have we discussed it peripherally? Yes, Councillor.
Excellent point. I think we did discuss it peripherally. I don't think this one requires a great deal of discussion. It is a light industrial zone. The process of developing this bylaw was a 7-year thing with extensive public input, and I do look forward to the next review, the formal review, which will identify some things, But I think we're greatly over-optimistic if we think that all things will pop up in that process when they didn't in the first seven-year process. So the reality is in 15 years, this council will be dealing with things as they arise. I certainly support this. It's a perfect building. The current owners of that building have really brought it to life. And this is a proponent who's been, you know, who's been very active in the dog business, and will, I'm sure, conduct a great business down there. And it would be appropriate in that light industrial zone to have other pet services. So,
any further discussion on the motion?
Questions?
If not, all in favor? Ah, unanimous one.
We're all friends again.
Before we leave that, those two issues about out planning, and I think it's important because you could misinterpret Councillor Frelick's comments, because regardless of what great plan comes up or what great plan could have been made, what Councillor Inglis said was right. It will never encompass everything that somebody's going to want to do.
Okay, that's
anyway,
not the
that's
labor.
It.
That's not the place for that debate. Yeah. I think now
it is what it is.
I'm getting to item 13.3, I hope, Councilor McLeod.
Okay, is there a recommendation?
Yes, there is.
Yes, okay. 13.3. I recommend that the Council of the Region of Queens Municipality grant permission to the Friends of Hank Snow Society for the period of August 19th. To 23rd, 2015, to do 1. Park recreational vehicles on the gravel overflow parking area beside Queens Place AmeriCenter. 2. Park recreational vehicles on the grass area between the water tower and Bristol Avenue. And number 3. Utilize PID number 70243233 and the southern portion of PID number 70081740 for overflow car parking.
And is that seconded by Councilor Pensy? Thank you. Discussion, the question was raised because the letter from Hank Snow is attached to this. The question is raised about cutting the grass. We're not cutting the grass on behalf of the Hank Snow Society. They're looking after it themselves, so that's of interest. Okay.
Okay.
Is there any discussion on the motion? It's a standard request each year.
Question.
All in favor? It's unanimous, and thank you.
Thank
that
you.
Concludes planning. I'm going to ask under 14, thanks a lot, Mike, I'm going to ask Steve Burns to come forward and just give us a verbal update, if you wouldn't mind, Steve, on the very successful evening that we had last Friday.
Thank you. Well, good morning. I guess it was 4 days ago now. Blue Rodeo came into town, some a little late than others. Jim Cuddy made it to the stage in the nick of time, so to speak, and I guess the concert got underway around 10 after 9, if I'm correct. Time is a blur. But everyone was treated to quite a show and quite an evening, and I guess just a couple of comments. Approximately 11 months ago, I guess we undertook the desire to study whether we could self-promote as the Region of Queens, etc. And I want to give credit to everyone around the table and for all the assistance that we received in coming to the decision that we could become a promoter. And thank you for your support, and I'm sure your citizens will be pleased that hey, we made out okay, and the financial we'll crunch those numbers right down to the penny, and we made out okay. 5 months ago, you gave the okay to move forward with a particular event, and it fell through, and probably a week later, I believe, you upped the ante, and you believed and we moved forward. And we had a solid plan. We, of course, will work to improve and debrief and do it even better the next time. So I look forward to anyone's feedback. Send me some bullet point information. That would be awesome. But I really want to extend again the thanks to the council, the commitment of the sponsors and the contractors that made the event happen, the people that executed it, all the staffs that were involved, all the staff members, and the volunteers, which we had a great mix of youth and immature individuals doing the volunteerism. You know, there was approximately, including the volunteers, we were at about 93% capacity in the building on a plan of 2,004 fans. I think that's pretty impressive, very impressive. We had lots of hustle and bustle and things going on from the community room, and we'll benefit from the canteen. Again, over, you know, the building, the flow into the building that night on a beautiful evening, you know, the weather really helped too, because no one would want to be in the outdoors on a rainy evening. But the flow in was seamless. The flow out was quite amazing. Lots of smiles and good feelings, and the band put on quite a show. And people were dancing on the track and mosh pitting at the front or something. I don't know what was going on there, but
I'm just glad you weren't dancing.
Yeah, I wasn't dancing, but
you were smiling.
I was. There was everything to smile about, and the execution that day, you know, personally for myself, the you know, everyone played their role and did their part, and everyone stood out. And when the chips were down and things had to happen, and there was always, you know, things that would happen, people did what they needed to do, and, you know, it went very well. And hey, congratulations to everyone. I could do a list like this, right? But to everyone, congratulations.
It's always a good opportunity to give a shout out to our staff, and your staff was awesome. The volunteers were awesome. I saw a lot of new volunteers that I hadn't seen at other events, which I thought was really great. But I was sitting with the manager from my office in Halifax, and there was somebody that at a time they shouldn't have been sort of invading the stage space. And I watched the volunteer go over and speak. It wasn't Kathleen. She was restrained by Tony. I watched the volunteer go over and try to suggest that this lady move. And then I watched this lady that I don't know, who looked pretty competent in a security jacket, come over and speak to her for several minutes, and then she left. And then I looked up and saw Kellyanne approaching, and I said to my manager, I said, the lady's about to move. And Kellyanne very very calmly managed to do her job. It really was a great spirit there. You know, the smiles on faces and then the buzz in the community the next day. I thought that you guys did a fantastic job. And we arrived at about 8:45 when it was, of course, really busy people arriving, and went out to the back of the line and get in, and we were in and inside the door in 4 minutes, and inside to the arena 3 or 4 minutes later. And what I was impressed with was, because I know we've talked before about concerns about people getting in and onto the floor, was how well directed that area was.
So, you know, we certainly have some great information on where people came from and, you know, who purchased and all that jazz. So that's going to be very valuable and you know, helping us as we dissect the whole thing and look at where we marketed and what we did and how we did it and all that. And, you know, we want to make sure that expense is effective. Great map builder for Region of Queens and the facility, I think, really sends a message to not just the music community, but the trade show community, anyone that, you know, Queens can bring a crowd out, people will respond. So, you know, down the road, we will, you know, again, you know, now there's many, many events that have been executed. Calls will come in to rent the facility. There may be decisions you may make that you want to do things.
See, that's really two in a row, isn't it? Because Charlie Pride, you were just about sold out, and it went just as very nearly as well.
Rough number, probably in the 18s, I think. This would have been the...
Another really, so two back-to-back major successes in the entertainment.
You know, and although nothing happened with it, there was a phone call received within a week. So people, you know, the people that buy shows and do stuff, they're watching. They're watching.
Well, as I was downstairs, sorry, just a second, then brand new, I was down in the lobby for a little while, and someone came up to me and identified herself as being from Myrtle. There were so many people, I didn't catch her name and so on. So yesterday, Susan and I were in a seminar in Halifax on housing. And there were people from Myrtle there, and there was a soup and sandwich lunch at the end of it. So Susan and I sat down with somebody from the District of Clare, and these Myrtle people came in, and the woman that had been speaking to me at the event turned out to work for LCLC. I told her the next time she comes to Queen's Place, she's to have a badge on which says spy. She was very, very impressed, because obviously she was down to see what we did and how we did it. And she said it was seamless too. I mean, from that point of view, I think that to get an outside person looking and telling you how good you are is almost more valuable than internal. And it was a stunning success. Sorry, Brian, you wanted to get in.
No, I just wanted to say that the thing that impressed me the most was the following day, because there were a lot of people that came for the weekend. A lot of people.
Yeah.
The hotels were completely booked. We were down in the park in the morning. We had the Jack's Run, the farmer's market. There was art in the park going on. The town was still hopping the next day. I went up to Frenchie's and I counted 50 people just there, between Blue Rodeo people staying in town and Jack's people had just run the race. And again, it's about getting them in and showing them what's there. And even the dogwood trees attracted a lot of people post Blue Rodeo. So the key is always to get them here and keep them here. And I think we did a great example that was held of people that stayed over and made a weekend out of it. So good timing. The Blue Rodeo part as well.
There was a little debate, I think, on the time of the event, but at 9 p.m. event allowed people to come to the community from away, which is really important for the facility, and allowed a lot of local folks on that beautiful evening to have some little parties at home or whatever before they came to that event, and I think it added to the overall atmosphere. Moods were high. But, you know, we will dissect it, and we are looking for feedback, and keep doing it better, and you name it.
Susan?
Job well done, as you know, and you were thanking us as council and community, but Steve, you've certainly done a phenomenal job, and I know that there's all kinds of opportunities from these events that then bring others to us from the exposure that we get. I wanted to say also that it was. I've heard so many people say what great acoustics we have in that facility. Mm-hmm. The sound was awesome. You know, I mean, some of the bands and that, they have specific requirements, and audience like to listen to specific ways of, you know, whatever their preference is. But I've heard so many great comments about the sound, and also the sound in the bar room now.
Yes.
In the community room was really an addition too, which, you know, people were relaxing and could kind of mull around and do a little bit of socializing as well. So that was a really good bonus.
Yeah, it was. That timing, that was just put in 2 weeks ago.
Yep.
Yeah.
Councilor Fisk.
I just want to give praise to Steve and the staff that what a great job. I went in, we were in the building within 2 minutes. No problem, just everything flowed through. It was an excellent concert. I had guests from Halifax to come to that concert. They couldn't believe the facility, they couldn't believe the acoustics. They just went ballistic over it. So, Steve, credit yourself and your staff.
It's wonderful that our community has this facility. I had nothing to do with it, but, you know, credit to the Region of Queens for building Queens Place. I think that these facilities, and it's my own personal comment and observation, in rural communities in Nova Scotia that have the ability to have these facilities, it is a quote-unquote the new industry. of attraction for communities to get people in and drive economics and, you know, keep on moving on and finding the next thing now, not later, and, you know, thank you.
That's a fancy.
Yes, Steve, as you said, it's been a process bringing this to where it is today, starting from something where we just wanted to be able to rent out to taking a major chance. So when I start looking at, the things, when we do something with this, it isn't to make money for the building and such, it's to put money back into the community. And it's, when you're getting up to 1,800-1,900 people, and even that we had the race the next day and people talking about it and about, wow, you had something this big in this little community, it really does stand out. It'll be interesting to look at just some of the, as we start looking at numbers and everything else, find out age demographics to find out what attracts us here and why we have been successful two times in a row on an event, especially with everything else going on with other events going on that you're trying to get the people in.
Yeah. Thank you, Jack, for all your support, and again, everyone.
It's great. It's giving. Sorry, can I step you in?
Just one thing. I know the mayor has a connection to the Moody Blues, and I'm thinking that for a $300 ticket or a $200 ticket.
It's wine in Charleston, my girl.
Exactly. And I'm thinking, we could probably sell $200 tickets to the Moody Blue, and maybe we could invite them to Nova Scotia and set them at White Point and put them in some private cottages. I think we really need to think big.
We did
think
bigger.
Thanks.
You rolled the dice.
It was good.
And it went well.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you very much,
thank
Steve.
You.
And
okay, yeah.
Thank you for your staff. The second last item on the agenda is the HVAC. And Kathleen, you're going to lead us. It comes under...
So what this item relates...
Go ahead, I'm looking for the mic.
What this item relates to, oh, I guess, yes, you need the motion first.
That's in the wrong place. Okay. It would come under...
I'll read. It's in my district. Economic development, anyway. I so move that the Council of the Region Queens Municipality authorize the funding of repairs for the HVAC system located at the call center in the amount of $44,000 and that these repairs be funded from the general operating surplus account.
Seconded.
Discussion. Kathleen, please.
So last year when we actually did our repairs, what we were replacing were the compressors. That system actually holds 8 compressors. 6 of the 8 compressors failed. We had to replace the 8 compressors. That's what that project replacement was about. This year when we were having our annual maintenance check on the system, it was discovered that there are condensers that were gone that need to be replaced, as well as we're bringing in professional training on the system through Trane, who actually are the manufacturers of the system. So part of that funding will actually train one of our engineering and works department staff, as well as one staff from HGS, which will enable them to understand how the coding is done around the zones in the building, because the building currently has hotspots and the system is locked down by Trane currently, so they need to have the training brought into the facility in order for people to understand how to unlock it, bring the temperatures up or down, and keep that facility at a constant temperature. That facility, I believe, Jill helped me, employs approximately 250 people, so ensuring that they have a comfortable climate to work in during the winter and summer is very important to us as landlords and to us into the community for the economic wealth that it brings to us. So that is the reason that you're seeing additional repairs. I mean, that system was put in 2003. So I mean, is that the point that we should be doing replacements on on a lot of the equipment? To the magnitude of the 8 compressors last year, if we would have understood the failing of the system, we probably would have had maintenance down there sooner. But when we actually had the specialist brought on site last year, they said that they start to fail after a certain period of time, and when one goes, they're connected, so it's a normal process when the machinery gets older. So that's why you're seeing additional repairs this year.
Okay.
and hopefully that this will be the end of it.
Question.
Because that's pretty well redone.
Question.
Question. All in favor of the motion? It's unanimous. So that brings us to the last.
Getting all choked up.
Today is Kathleen's last council meeting.
She is
going to
cry.
So we talked about dancing earlier. Don't do a gig. Normally, when one comes to do these retirements, one has a list of dates and so on that I can rattle off or someone has given me. I don't have a single note. I don't need one. Kathleen has been an integral part of this organization since it was formed in 1996. She became director of finance at that time. She was part of the heartthrob of the Region of Queens. The first challenge that she had was to pull two very different accounting systems, finance systems, together. It took an enormous amount of work, an enormous number of hours. We just got her through that, and the region became the first municipality outside HRM to adopt the SAP computer system. A huge amount of work again, do you remember?
Oh, yeah.
So, in the interim years, and Kathleen has continued to grow and continued to make the region of Queens financially sound, financially a leader amongst municipalities in the province. She's become CAO and for the last 4 years has done outstanding work. And she and I were chatting the other day, yesterday, and Kathleen was sort of bouncing, and she should have been. And we talked about Blue Rodeo and Queen's Place. And what a comment on her tenure as CAO, because when she came in, Queen's Place was just sort of coming together. When we became council 2.5 years ago, Queen's Place had monumental staff problems. It didn't really have a sense of direction, and yet 2.5 years later, we have a fine team of people in Queen's Place that was able to pull it together, and Steve reported to us. What a monument to someone's career. So all the best, and thank you.
I think I should actually do this. I would certainly like to say a sincere thanks to council, to leadership such as Chris Clark and all of yours, to the phenomenal staff that I've had the opportunity to work with over the years. I have some great friends in this building. And it's been a great 32 years.
Wow.
A mere child when you came in, right?
I was.
Diapers and all.
How could you even have a social insurance number when you're 10?
So thank you.
We love you, Kathleen.
That concludes the public session of the agenda. Could we take 5 minutes and then go in camera?
Yes.
Thank you all.